walk the straight and narrow, and I've worn a rebel's brand. Sometimes I've had to go without for being my own man. I've rallied to the cause when I knew the cause was right. Yes, I've cut against the grain, but I've kept my peace of mind. Well, that's what I'll have to pay. I'll take the good and bear the bad until my dying day. I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, folks, I wouldn't have it any other way. Welcome to the Rebel and the Renegade Roundtable here at RBN on the 28th day of April in the year of 2024. And this would be our last, not the last day, but it's the last weekend of Confederate History Month, in which we honor our ancestors and their noble cause. And I have with me, of course, that thought criminal himself, none other than Mr. Stephen Douglas Whitener. Stephen, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, Mike. Thanks for having me, and I'm proud to honor my ancestors with you. I did hear the producer say that there might be some issue with the stream. I wanted to mention that if I ever have trouble with RBN stream, there is a phone number I'll call. I don't know if this information may be helpful to somebody. Yeah, I call 518-931-1009, and it plays over the phone. I can do that and listen in my car sometimes, even though the device I have now will cut out the stream after a certain length of time. And I just wanted to pass that on just in case anybody, you know, could use it.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Yeah. I certainly appreciate that. And I tell you what, I can't think of a more appropriate person to have with me tonight to do what I want to do. And that would be my good buddy, the thought criminal from South Kakalaki. And also, our intro music was from one of those fine southern boys from Blue Ridge, South Carolina. Is that not correct, Stephen?
Yes, sir. Aaron Tippin lives right up the road there. Yes, sir.
Not that far away, huh?
No, sir.
Well, Stephen, before I jump into what I would actually like to, and, you know, I don't really like to read that much, but I think this is just critically important considering our Southern ancestors. And I do want to read something, but before we get to that, Stephen, what have you seen or what have you observed during this Confederate History Month that you haven't seen before?
I don't know how to answer that exactly. I mean, I've seen a lot of things the past month I haven't seen before, but to relate it to the Confederacy, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where you're going with that, sir. I'm not sure how to answer that one. There are a lot of things I've seen this month I never saw before. That's a loaded question, I guess, in some way.
I know a lot of people. I'm sorry for interrupting, Stephen. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who just, and I've had people ask me about this emotion that we true Southerners have for our ancestors.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, of course, the Yankees don't have that because their ancestors were friends of Karl Marx, most of them. But they don't have that affinity that we do in the South for our ancestors, and that is one of the reasons I truly wanted to do tonight's program. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read, and please pardon me for this, and Stephen, I'm kind of, you know, not much to be said here till we get through, but I would like to get through this if I may.
Please do, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, and I'm not going to tell you exactly where it happened or when it happened until I finish with the article. In introducing what may be said, I beg leave to make two requests. First, that in any utterances which may have a political complexion, I may not be understood to assume to speak as a minister of the gospel and as delivering a message from the Lord, but as any citizen might express his sentiments who professes to fear God and to cherish the interest of his people. Secondly, that as a special interest attaches to this occasion, some indulgence as to time may be granted for the remarks which may be offered. And wilt thou, Almighty Being, inspire what may be uttered with the spirit of wisdom, justice, and truth. The circumstances which assemble us in the streets of this city of the dead are in the last degree solemn, tender, and affecting. The bones of our brethren have for nearly 8 years been sleeping in the graves in which they were laid on the bloody battlefield of Gettysburg. Their repose was unbroken by the roar of subsequent conflicts, by the wild wail of grief which broke forth at the fall of their beloved country, or by the triumphal honors paid to the memories of those who battled against the cause for which they died and fell on the same field with them. The wounded who survived for a brief while the carnage of that day turned amid their last thoughts on earth to the state they had loved so well, even as dying children to a mother, and ere they yielded up their gallant spirits, breathed the fervent entreaty, "Send our bodies to South Carolina to be buried there." Was it that in their last moments of consciousness they recoiled from the thought that they would be interred in an enemy's soil and that their graves would be designated? They did not mistake. The remains of their opponents have very naturally been carefully collected and with distinguished funeral honors been laid side by side in a place of resting decorated by the hands of affection. They were left to sleep apart. We could not have wished it otherwise. They had, as a peculiar people, contended for their rights, and as a peculiar people, occupied graves by themselves. In death, as in life, adhering to a noble and sacred, though despised and execrated cause. They were entitled to strangers' accommodations, and they received them. But they will no longer sleep alone. They will now have a fellowship in death from which they have hitherto been excommunicated. Their dying wish is fulfilled. Their isolated repose has been interrupted by the gentle hands of their country women who have tenderly removed them from their alien graves and brought them hither for admission to the communion of the kindred dead. They have come home at last, and we, their brethren, their comrades, bone of their bone and flesh of their flesh, are met with one accord to welcome them to their native soil. We receive them not as conquerors, else would a whole people in funeral procession and with military pageantry have escorted them to their coveted repose. But none the less honor on that account shall be awarded them. Not one chaplet, not one laurel wreath shall be withheld, albeit twined with the willow and the cypress. Not the roll of drums, the blast of bugles, and the thunder of cannon, but the throb of grief, the quick-flowing tear, the yearning of an unspeakable love, all that boundless admiration, undying gratitude, and unconquered principles can give these heroes of a defeated but glorious cause are the tribute we offer you today. Afflicted Carolina, rise in thy mourning weeds and receive thy returning children to thy maternal breast. Pillow them softly here, for there they prayed to sleep their long and dreamless sleep. Here let men who never surrendered except to death find a fitting resting place in a spot overlooking the waters, which were never parted by a hostile keel so long as an artilleryman remained with his port fire behind the guns which guarded them. And yonder battered and ragged fortress, which though often assaulted, was never carried by storm. Here, let them sleep with those who never looked upon a conqueror's flag, floating over the citadels of a sovereign state, but close their eyes upon a still, free, and defiant commonwealth. Shoulder to shoulder, these men stood. Now let them lie side by side, Confederates in life, Confederates, let them be in death. Deep as is the grief which this occasion calls forth, we are not here simply as mourners for the dead. There are living issues which emerge from these graves, gigantic problems affecting our future, which starting up in the midst of these solemnities demand our earnest attention. The question which thrills every heart is, did these men die in vain? Their death was but the logical conclusion of the principles which led to our great struggle and furnished their highest and most significant illustration. It was the costliest sacrifice which an injured people could make for the maintenance of their fundamental liberties. Fathers and mothers gave up their children. Wives gave up their husbands. Sisters, their brothers. Sovereign states, their sons. And these men themselves, for the sake of a cause which involved every earthly interest and overshadowed every earthly relation. What sacrifice could for a moment be put into comparison with this? To have yielded up our fortunes, to have been ejected from our burning homes, to have witnessed the sacking of our cities and the destruction of our harvest, could all these have borne any analogy to the loss of these lives? The questions therefore forced themselves upon us. Was this sacrifice a useless one? Was this precious blood spilt wholly in vain? There are two senses in which it must be admitted that they lost their cause. They failed to establish a confederacy as an independent country, and they failed to preserve the relation of slavery. But there were fundamental principles of government, of social order, of civil and religious liberty, which underlay and pervaded that complex whole which we dominated our cause. And the question whether those who fell in its support died in vain, as to those principles, must depend for its answer upon the course which will be pursued by the people of the South. What then shall be the nature of our answer? What the course which men shall adopt? There is but one reply which deserves to be returned to those inquiries. Our brethren will not have died in vain. If we cherish in our hearts, and as far as in us lies, practically maintain the principles for which these brave men gave their lives. Either these men were rebels against lawful authority, or they were not. If they were, then the principles upon which they acted ought to be abandoned, and the cause for which they contended ought to be consigned to oblivion. Dear as their memory is to us, we would have no warrant in being moved by personal relations to them to perpetuate a grievous wrong. If they were not, then every noble attribute of our nature, every sacred sentiment of justice, gratitude, and consistency should impel us to justify their course and to perpetuate the principles for which they died. And this is our position. In the face of the world, we protest that so far from having been rebels against legitimate authority and traitors to their country, they were in fact lovers of liberty, combatants for constitutional rights, and as exemplars of heroic virtue, benefactors of their race. This is not mere assertion dictated by sympathy or uttered in the spirit of bravado. It is susceptible of proof. There are three elements in the social constitution of man involving corresponding necessities: the domestic, the political, and the religious. Answering to these fundamental features of our nature, there are three divinely ordained institutes, independent of, but related to each other: the family, the state, and the church. Taken together, they constitute the trinity of human relations. Each of them is indispensable to the well-being if not the very preservation of the race. They are the pillars on which rests the stability of society, as well as the prime motors in its progress. Its organic nisus towards the great end for which it was originally ordained. To injure either of them is to strike a blow at the root of human happiness, and so intimate is the bond between them, so nice and delicate their action and reaction upon each other, that to impair one of them is to imperil the integrity of them all. Adverse to each and all of these beneficent ordinations, and consequently antagonistic to the vital interest which they suppose, there is a spirit abroad in the earth, almost universal in its operation, the measures of which are characterized by a subtlety and unity betokening the shaping influence of one master intelligence, that of the arch foe of God and man. Need it be said that this is radicalism, conceived in revolt from the sublime and harmonious order in which the different elements operate? It purposes to upturn the very ground forms of society, nothing that is sustained by the experience of the past, nothing that is venerable with age and consecrated by immemorial associations, nothing that descending through the ages has retained in the midst of change and revolution. The fragrance of our primeval estate, or even of patriarchal dignity and simplicity, nothing just, true, and pure, will be allowed to escape the sweep of this deluge. Montalbart has said, in effect, that there is a force in Europe set in motion by radical agitators and penetrating and impelling the sea-like masses, which, if unchecked, is destined ere long to obliterate every existing secular and ecclesiastical organization. Folks, I break from the reading there to tell you he was talking about Marxism. This ruthless, leveling spirit wages war against the family, the state, and the church. Hearthstones, graves, altars, temples, all are borne down under its tempestuous eruption. Nothing is safe from it. There is no sanctuary which it will not invade, no just, holy, time-honored sanction which it will not violate. Contempting the ordinances of man, it swaggers in its titanic audacity against the empire of the eternal. A leader of Parthian socialism is reported recently to have exclaimed that if he could reach the Almighty, he would pinion him upon his throne. Breach after breach has it already opened through the barriers which limit and restrain it, and in its onward rush, should laws, constitutions, and public sentiments fail to impede its course, can only be arrested, aside from immediate divine intervention, by the iron power of imperial absolutism. Plunged into the vortex by the genius of lawlessness, swimming for life in the vast gulf of the miseries induced by it, men will in very despair turn for refuge to autocratic despotism. It has been said that by a great writer on government that there are two cardinal wants of society, protection and liberty, and that of these the first in order is protection. Existence must be presupposed by happiness. In accordance with this principle, it is but natural to judge that when men have tried the desolating misrule of radical anarchy, they would recoil for protection under the scepter of despotism. But a selfish desire for safety will not have eradicated the descriptive habits of democratic license, and the probable resultant of these conflicting forces will be a mechanical union between the imperial and the popular element, between consolidated despotism and democratic absolutism. To this, the indications in Europe and on this continent seem to point. Extremes will meet on a principle shared by both, uncompromising hostility to regulated government and to liberty. Apparently, as far apart as the poles, they will be united by a common axis on which the insane attempt will be made to drive the revolutions of the political world, and if an opinion might be ventured, suggested by a probable view of inspired prophecy, the day may not be far distant when this consummation will be reached. The body of iron will be attached to the feet of clay, significant symbol of a great imperial despotism resting on the uncertain masses of a fierce democracy. When this climax of crime and folly shall have been attained, there will be one of two alternatives before a sickened and despairing world. On the one hand, the experience of a condition of things in which a social, political, and religious chaos will reign, in which star after star of hope will be quenched, the constellations of the great lights be blotted from the firmament, and the earth, saturated with blood, shall go down into a seething abyss of destruction. Or, on the other hand, a supernatural interposition of God to rectify the otherwise remediless disorders of the world and the reestablishment of a theocratic government no longer confining its sway to one favored people, but assuming the diadem of universal dominion, healing the schisms of the race, collecting the struggling nations into one peaceful flock, and distributing with impartial hand the blessings of equal rule, regulated liberty, and widespread domestic peace. Well, believe it or not, there, Stephen, I'm only about a third of the way through that thing, and I'm not sure I'm going to read the whole thing, but would you tell me, please, Stephen, what did you gather from that so far?
Wow, that was, I don't know when and where you said you'd reveal that later, but I was thinking of the way that history was taught to us, and you know, the way that it was shown one way, and then it's this encroaching Marxism, cosmopolitanism that was coming in during this time. You know, 150 years ago, when the Civil War, the Confederacy was happening, it's the way, like you started out with, unless you have ancestors that went through that when it was invaded, I guess you don't understand the affinity. But I don't want to interrupt you too long, because I was intensely listening to what you were saying. I was thinking of the way things had happened and the way that I had been shown they happened. There was the conflict, and that was going on in my mind at the time. That's kind of where my thoughts are. Sorry, Phil.
Well, buddy, I'm not going to really hit everybody with this, you know, I mean, with the whole thing yet. Mm-hmm. But what I did want to do at this point was I did want to give the folks, and you as well, Stephen, the origin of this, and to give you a little bit of a background. In South Carolina, especially the folks around Charleston, the women especially, in the pursuance of Confederate Memorial Day, they raised money. They did stuff for several years. Again, led by the women of the South. They raised the money. They actually went to Gettysburg and dug up, disinterred as many of the Southern soldiers as from South Carolina as they could possibly find. Now, upon them all being reinterred in the Magnolia Cemetery in Charleston, South Carolina, this was an address given by the Reverend John L. Girardo, Doctor of Divinity, at the reinterment ceremony at the Magnolia Cemetery in Charleston of the South Carolina Confederate Gettysburg Dead on Confederate Memorial Day, 10th of May, 1871. So this is what they were saying at that ceremony. And again, it's quite lengthy, I can promise you. But he not only, and one of the things about the Reverend John L. Girardo was he was very much opposed to slavery and preached against it before the war started. So this was not your slave-loving gentleman who was making these statements or making this ceremony. So having been told that, Stephen. What do you think?
Well, that's 6 years after the war, and I guess that they were looking at things a little bit differently down the road, seeing that look, the South was right to stand up to that empire, and it came in and crushed them. And now I kind of started looking at things from a different point of view when I look back in history now. I was just reflecting on that difference in the two points of view there and that time period. 1871, okay, that's just 6 years after the end of the war, right there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and the women in the South in 6 years after all that happened, then they went and got the men and brought them back. That's something there, that they went and got the men and put them in South Carolina, the ones that had died at Gettysburg. That's quite a story. I was not aware of that before.
Well, I found it remarkable. I've had this sermon. I've had it probably for 25, 30 years when I first found it. And I thought of it with Confederate Memorial Day and us ending here, and I thought it would be an appropriate end for our programs on Confederate History Month. But I was just absolutely amazed, Stephen, when I first read this, that this preacher was able to see through the Marxist principles that were invading the country with the Yankee victory. And, of course, we know that they were living under Reconstruction at this time in South Carolina. So, what I thought I would do, Stephen, is let's just you and I just kind of discuss this thing until we get to the break. And then when we come back on the other side, I'll read some more of this, because it is most poignant. It is absolutely beautiful.
And Reconstruction didn't end until, 76, wasn't it? So there was still 5 years to go when he was making this sermon.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's...
They were seeing the despotism. They were seeing the crimes of this Marxist society that had been brought on the South. You know, and, of course, the Marxists came from Europe in 1848, and they took over the North rather easily. Created the Republican Party, and then waged war on the South to promote their Marxist socialist principles. Go ahead.
I was thinking, yes, sir, during that time period, they arrived on the rails and on the telegraph line. I just saw it as an invasion coming in instead of all the settlers going westward, ho. It was really the other way around, this encroaching cosmopolitan kind of, I don't know how else to phrase it. But, yeah, it just is a completely different perspective I was getting from you reading that sermon to what I had previously thought of history as.
Right. And so now do you, I guess I kind of put you on the spot with that first question, Stephen. I didn't mean to do that, but what have you seen? If we compare, you and I met, 2 years ago, July?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
At the Great Dixie Republic, one of the sponsors here at RBN. And, here comes the music, guys. So we'll be back on the flip side, folks.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hello. homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Thank God for the people with guts, with the absolute courage of a conviction to stand up and fight against this Marxist-dominated government that we've had ever since Abraham Lincoln. It's been here and in this country, and it just absolutely amazed me that this minister back in 1871 saw it for what it was. And so now, Stephen, with your consent, I'll continue reading this dedication.
Please do, Mike. Yeah.
All right. This somewhat extended portrait of the spirit of radicalism will not be deemed out of place when it is remembered that it powerfully contributed to produce the evils under which we are now suffering. It was against its aggressions in the particular forms in which they were directed upon the South that these men, whose memories we honor today, and their compatriots, continued unto the death. It was this fell spirit which, aiming at the destruction of an institution particular to the South, overrode every moral and constitutional obstacle which opposed its progress. It drenched a once peaceful land in fraternal blood and has occasioned that disturbed condition of affairs which is now likely to be confined to no section but threatens to agitate the entire country. It began by assuming the existence of a higher law, growing out of what were denominated the instincts of human nature, which it held to be superior in the sphere of morality to divine revelation, and in that of politics to the provisions of the federal constitution. Which such a theory from which to derive its inspirations, it is not to be wondered at that it regarded neither the laws of God nor of man, which were conceived to lie in the path to the attainment of its ends. Pushing out this baleful dogma to its legitimate results, it boldly invaded the political order and the fundamental principles of that federative government, which we had inherited from our fathers. Resting not until it had destroyed the attitude of strict neutrality imparted to the Constitution, it perverted that instrument into an organ and the government into an agent of a section, trampled underfoot the rights of all of the sovereign states, and utterly refused to the people of the South all claim to even think and act for themselves. It was a case demanding resistance from free men. It was in view of such subversions of their constitutional rights and liberties that the Southern states, in their organic capacity and by the solemn acts of conventions, determined to withdraw from a confederation in which it was plain as day that their hopes of justice and equal consideration had been destroyed. This act of sovereignty they were refused the liberty of performing, and no choice was left but unconditionally to submit or meet force with force. They adopted the alternative of free men. In the struggle which ensued, the sons of the South, feeble in numbers and in apparatus of war, excluded from the fellowship of nations, cut off by a cordon of fire from access to the ports of the world, and overwhelmed by vast hordes representing every European nationality, failed to secure the independence they sought. They lost the power to exercise certain rights and principles. But did they lose these rights and principles themselves? How could they? Except in the case of any which, acting in their organic capacity since the close of the war, they may have deliberately relinquished. Lost them? Yes. As a weak man, overpowered by a superior physical strength of another, may be said to lose the right for which he has contended. He loses the exercise of it until he has the power to recover it. Are the religious principles of the martyr destroyed because he is burnt for standing for those principles? Does the free man lose his natural or political rights because tyranny represses their very existence and their exercise? The very struggle to maintain them, the blood that was shed for them, the lives that were sacrificed in their defense, rendered their rights and principles all the dearer to the men out of whom all love of liberty is not completely crushed. Our principles were defeated, but not necessarily lost. It behooves us to cling to them as drowning men to the fragments of a wreck. They furnish the only hope for our political future, the only means of escape from anarchy on the one hand or from despotism on the other, which are left to a once free and happy country. If the death of our brethren shall have the effect of enhancing these principles in our regard, it will not have been in vain. These men also contended for the existence and the purity of their social relations, particularly in the domestic forum. They fought for their firesides, as well as for their political rights. The same radical spirit which disregarded the limitations of the Constitution condemns the divinely instituted barriers which fence in the sanctities of the family relation. Its triumph bodes for us no good. The danger is imminent of the introduction amongst us of novel socialistic theories born on another soil and coming in as filthy camp followers of a conquering host. Their first appearance may excite no alarm. They may even be derided, but they start tendencies, and tendencies, especially when seconded by the depraved instincts of nature, speedily become results if not arrested in their inception. It becomes us with all of our might to resist that corruption of manners which is incompatible with the simplicity of free institutions and the purity and integrity of moral character. The overwhelming affliction through which we have passed, the trials through which we are still passing, and the memory of our dead should lead us to a corresponding gravity of deportment. Who of us is there who does not sometimes weep over our glorious past? Is there one of us across whose soul there does not sometimes sweep the storm of irrepressible grief? We are not yet done burying our dead. We are now standing by the open graves of those men among us who died for liberty, who died for us. We cannot put out the signals of mourning yet. Shall we ever do it while our liberties are prostrated? It is to be greatly feared that a temper of levity is growing among us which ill befits the seriousness, the deep sadness of our condition. These are homely counsels. Would that they were not suggested by obvious dangers. Oh, my countrymen, if ever we are really finally conquered, it will be by ourselves. The process of dissolution will commence from within. The history of the past indicates it to be an almost universal law. The most powerful nations have succumbed under their own deterioration of moral sentiment and the degeneracy of manners. As long as these causes of decay were inoperative, no external force or internal agitations availed to destroy them. Look at the English people. While comparative simplicity and purity of manners prevailed, revolution followed revolution, but the country itself stood strong. The fundamental law was perfected by fresh guarantees of freedom. Every conflict enhanced the vigor of their institutions. Every storm settled the roots of the tree of liberty deeper and faster into the soil. It is said by observers the luxuriousness of living has greatly increased among them. If so, the checks and balances of their conservative government will be soon put to the strain. Its noble embankments will not long stand against this sea of radicalism, which is beginning to dash in thunder against us. We must resist the influence of radicalism in its socialistic aspects as we would oppose the progress of a plague. Socialism and communism are developments of the same radical spirit. They go hand in hand. When the relations of life are subverted, the rights which spring from them are destroyed. When the altars of the family are overthrown, it is but a step to tear down the pillars of the state. The stability of political principle and the happiness of the people depend upon the preservation of the social system from the inroads of socialistic corruption. To poison this is to poison the fountain. Let us read in the fearful tragedy now enacting in Paris before the horrified gaze of the world the bitter end to which we too shall inevitably come unless we steadfastly maintain the principles which have been twice consecrated by our patriotic blood. that of our ancestors in the first, and that of our brethren and fathers in the second Revolutionary War. We have seen that in the complex constitution of our nature, the religious element forms an integral part, and that provision is made for its exercise in the divinely appointed institute of the church. In contending against those influences which threaten to sap the foundations of every venerable institution, our slain brethren fought for their altars, as well as for their firesides and their political franchises. This is not an extravagant statement. The spirit of the Christian religion pervaded the army of the Confederacy. The vast majority of our soldiers were its nominal adherents, and thousands of them were professors of the Christian faith. Its influence was felt in almost every regiment, in the quiet of camp, during the march, and on the eve of battle. Its sacred services imparted fortitude under hardship and heroic courage for the day of conflict. From the commander-in-chief to the humblest private in the ranks, a reverent respect was paid to its ministers and its ordinances. We have seen Robert E. Lee, unattended by even a sergeant, go afoot through the mire to the soldiers gathering for worship, and sitting in the midst of them, devoutly listen with them to the preaching of God's word, and mingle his prayers and praises with theirs. Jackson was proverbially a man of prayer. He led his fiery and resistless columns into the tempest of battle with hand uplifted to heaven in token of dependence on God and a supplication for his blessings. It deserves to be mentioned that the great soldier, before the breaking out of hostilities, taught a humble Sabbath school at Lexington, the pupils of which, when his remains were taken there for burial, followed him with every mark of affection to their last quiet resting place. I desire to record it, and amidst the affecting solemnities of this funeral occasion, that during an extended experience as chaplain, I never encountered a sick, wounded, or dying Southern soldier who had ever rejected the Christian faith or treated its proffered consolations with contempt. Let us then accept from them, as in some sort martyrs for religion as well as for the liberty, the solemn obligation to maintain the Christianity which sustained them amid the privations of a soldier's life and the anguish of a soldier's death. The relation between our people and the gospel at once confers invaluable benefits and creates imperishable responsibilities. We cannot impair it without doing ourselves irreparable damage. Our civilization takes its dominant type from Christianity. All its distinctive moral features are derived from it. Ancient pagan civilizations embodied the intellectual as well as our own. We can boast of no capacity of thought, no mental culture superior to that which distinguished the land of Homer and Aristotle, or the home of Virgil and Cicero. But the incompleteness and the self-destructiveness inherent in a civilization merely intellectual are illustrated in the history of every great power of ancient times. The stability of a state and of the institutions which it embraces and which go to make up its organic life depend on the degree in which the principal moral obligation obtains and the rules of virtue are practiced. But as has been observed by a splendid writer on American democracy, there can be no true morality without religion. It is incumbent upon us, therefore, as possessing the only perfect religion which the world has known, to appreciate the responsibilities which flow from such an endowment. Apostasy from Christianity would be suicide. But may be asked, what special danger is there of such an event growing out of our present circumstances? It may be said in reply that the danger is twofold. First, the critical changes through which we have passed expose us to the invasion of theories and the pressure of influences which were excluded by our settled conditions of the past. The violence of the revolution in our circumstances can scarcely be exaggerated. Not only has our political state been so altered as to reverse relations formerly existing, but one element has been torn by force and torn suddenly out of the very fabric of our social system. Our domestic life is passing through a most extraordinary transition. We are therefore in a forming condition. Every month is settling precedents for our future. Old institutions, customs, and sentiments are breaking up as by the upheaval of a deluge. And it is a question of the last importance into what order, what type of thought, opinion, and practice we shall finally crystallize. It is while we are passing through this transitional process that the peril is imminent that ideas, theories, and usages may be embedded in the yielding mass, which, when it shall have consolidated, no power will avail to extract. Already does this danger threaten us in the sphere of religion, and it becomes us to watch against tendencies which carry in them the seeds of defection from a pure religious faith. So, Stephen, I'm going to take a little break here and get a drink of water. So what are your thoughts so far?
I was just trying to put myself back in 1871 when he was given these words, how things were different. That's as you were reading that you're right that he saw the Marxist influence coming in the way it did. That was remarkable to me, the way things are reflected now, that they just we're caught in the intersection now of those two, these Marxist theories, you know, this woke, what I forgot how he put it, I was impressed that he saw that dialectic working between authoritarianism on the one side and anarchy on the other. It's like we're right, they're still using the intersection of those two right now to try to steer things where we are. And that was 1871. And it's unique what happened to the South, not only being invaded during the war, but then the quote-unquote Reconstruction too, and that went on 5 more years after this. That was when there was a lot of bad things happened in South Carolina in that period of time. A bad earthquake in Charleston sometime in the 1870s. I don't know if that was after Reconstruction ended or right about that same time. I was just going back in that period of time in my mind while you were reading, Mike. That's kind of where my head was, and I was enjoying listening to that. I think it honors our ancestors a lot to read this. This guy, it amazes me when I think of it still, that they went and they got their bodies, their men, and brought them all the way back to South. And in 1871, when they had to go running back and forth and do that on a train, you know, and that was quite an endeavor. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to read a little bit more of this till we reach the top of the hour break, Stephen. And the prostration of our civil forebodes injury to our religious liberties. Civil liberty and religious liberty are twin sisters. They stand or fall together. Here, however, a distinction is necessary. It is freely conceded that the essential liberty of the soul cannot be formed by human power. There are two prerogatives with which our Maker has endowed us, which no tyranny can affect. They lie beyond the jurisdiction of human courts and the coercion of human executives. They are as free in the dungeon, at the stake, and on the gibbet, as in the assemblies of an unconquered people or in the issues of an unlicensed and unmuzzled press. They are the inalienable, indestructible powers of thought and language, the faculty by which we form our opinions, and that by which we express them. The body may be manacled in irons, while the mind, in its limitless excursions, mounts as on wings of fire above the stars. The tongue, the glory of our corporal frame, the harp from the strings of which is evoked the spontaneous adoration of God, the trumpet which heralds forth to mankind the noble conceptions of the human intelligence. The tongue, the obedient organ of free thought, cannot be coerced. It may be cut out, but cannot be compelled to speak. When therefore physical liberty is restrained, these essential godlike prerogative of the soul are as untrammeled as ever. But the freedom to express positively our convictions, to embody in outward form our worship of the deity, to maintain institutions significant of our faith, this freedom may be crushed by human power. The church in its external manifestations may be suppressed. In this point of view, the difference between civil and religious liberty becomes exceedingly thin. The one may, to some extent, survive the other, especially if the ruin of that other be not total. But the destruction of one originates the impulse to the subversion of the other and also supplies the motive to it. What has been done may be done, and when civil liberty has in fact been extinguished, the argument is a short one to the extinction of religious. It is the argument of triumphant power. Farther than this, the connection between these two complementary forms of liberty is so close, the fire on the one altar so readily communicates itself to the smoldering ashes on the other, that it is evident that as long as one is enjoyed, the other cannot be completely quenched. Their principles are akin, and the existence of one necessarily conduces to the maintenance of the other. Well, we're almost at break time here, Stephen, but I am just absolutely amazed at this minister's ability to see through what this Marxism and socialism was going to bring to the entire country. What do you think?
I think it's terrific. There were some very powerful words, passages in there. I'll please send me a link to this, because there were several passages in there. I thought, well, that was so well put, and I can see what he did see through. I was thinking how it's reflected in what we have today, what he was saying would happen. Yeah, well, it's happening right now, especially that dialectic between the anarchy and the authoritarianism. And I really liked how he said the tongue could be cut out and shut off, but it couldn't be compelled. You know, the truth will out kind of thing. That was really powerful. I liked that a lot.
Well, Stephen, I'll get this on the way to you right away. I have all noticed, right, and I would tell the other folks too, anyone who wants it, let me know. But I would also tell you that 10-15 years ago, this was in several places on the internet where it cannot be found anymore. They're gradually eliminating these things, because I went back to check several sources for a PDF of this, and they're not there anymore.
That's hard to hear. There was something else you mentioned previous show that used to be available that's not there anymore, PDF of a particular book. I forgot which one it was, but now Operation Cyanide, I think it was.
Yes.
That's the one that was mentioned. Yes, yeah. Sir. There you go. My memory's slow, but it's still there, I guess.
Stephen, how many people do we both encounter in our lives every day and on social media as well, you know, who want to say, well, show me a link.
Yeah, well, exactly.
You know, yeah, like Google tells the truth. Come on, people. If you can't find, and that is what, this is the PSYOP that has worked so well, Stephen. These people truly believe that everything that they need to know can be found with a Google search.
Oh.
I've been selling my soul.
There's the music.
Here it comes. See you on the other side, folks.
Bullshit pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away. Drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me. People like you wish I could just wake up and it not be true. But it is. Oh, it is living in the new world with an old soul. These rich men north or rich men, Lord knows it all, just want to have total control. Want to know what you think, want to know what you do, and they don't
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.